Hello everyone, welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. Today is season 2, episode 16, and the topic is called What Auditors Always Find and Why. I am very, very glad to say that I'm joined by Katerina. Hello.
I'm really happy to be here with you.
It was a really nice session, wasn't
it? Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really good. We started to talk a little bit about the news. Obviously, the ICO now released the new soft opt-in guidance, which I think for applicable for charities, which I think is very useful. We spoke a little bit about the news that you looked into about the premium subscription on LinkedIn.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah, and what is the impact on Article 15? And then we jumped in for our audits.
Favorite subject?
What do you think? Tell me.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Okay.
I don't know what to say.
Do you want me to outsay mine and then carry on? Or do you want me to jump on the question? What do you want to say?
I can say that I really enjoyed Strangest Things.
Stranger Things.
Strangest Findings. And sorry.
Oh, this time was not me.
It wasn't you.
Okay.
Sorry, Miles.
That's okay.
Oh, he's used to it. No worries.
He's here for 5 more minutes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. Today's episode 16, season 2, and the topic is what auditors always find and why. I'm very happy to say that I'm joined by Katerina. Hello.
I'm really happy to be here.
Hi.
Hello.
We had a very, very good session. We started to talk about a little bit about the news, the new release from the ICO on guidance on the soft opt-in applicable to charities. Then we spoke a little bit about the LinkedIn and the premium subscription and their impact on Article 15. But then we jumped in on our topic and it was super nice because we had loads of engagement from audience. It's always had amazing to have it. But I think you had like a special topic, didn't you, about this one?
Yeah. I love the strangest findings.
We identified a couple of them that definitely were the weirdest with our audits.
It was an interesting one, really interesting one.
I feel like we spoke a little bit about what should be the practices, how actually prepare yourself for an audit. As well, what should be our present as an audit on our side, and a couple of insights of someone that had some experience in doing some audits, even like more recent. But we will leave it to it. I hope you have a really nice weekend and I hope you enjoy the session. Thank you.
Enjoy.
And before we crack on with the audits, I've seen that the ICO published a new charitable purpose soft opt-in guidance, which was a very, very needed guidance. I understand Wendy's came up with a duo, and obviously it was officially implemented and on the 5th of February. But to be honest with you, I always had questions, even with our charities, clients, like how actually this will be implemented. Yeah. Is there any guidance, anything, any examples that we can forward? We understand that retrospectively can be used in terms of like opt out, but so many questions that came up with this legislation. So it's really good. Finally, the ICO made the decision to make this happen.
Yeah, at that point. I think all of us had received a lot of questions from charities at that point. So I feel that everyone can feel now more assured of what they can do and if this will be compliant or not.
Yeah. And it remains to be seen, actually, if the guidance is enough or not. I did not have a chance to read it as a whole. There was a consultation process that happened, well, a couple of months ago. And I know there were a lot of questions about the retrospectively concept majority and what is the charitable purpose, if it's like a defined definition, yes or no. So I think is to be seen, yes, if it's still enough for this soft opt-in.
Yeah, in practice, it's always harder, I think, that Yeah, we'll see.
But there was actually exciting news. You were chatting actually previously to the episode. You've seen something about the LinkedIn premium subscription, didn't you?
Yeah, the LinkedIn. Yeah, it's quite interesting, this one. Because an advocacy group had submitted a formal complaint to the Austrian Data Protection Authority claiming that LinkedIn does not provide all the privacy information when you submit a siren, especially who has visited your profile.
Okay.
While you have the possibility to monitor who visited your profile if you buy the premium subscription. So this is interesting because they hold this information. They argue that they don't provide this information for data protection concerns of other users.
Yeah.
But they will provide the information to you if you pay the extra fee. So is this in line with articles 15?
I agree. I completely. I think that's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, because they hold this information. Yeah. Like, this information is on their system. Why you don't provide it to
the requester? If you request it, because obviously LinkedIn as a platform is a controller. Information is held. Data subjects have the right to request the information under the Article 15. And I think is quite important because if I understand correctly, that the AINO-IB is arguing that LinkedIn is willing to disclose information commercially, which obviously is contradictory. And the argument is the privacy and the data protection concerns versus the free right to access the information, as well as question is whether companies are all right to monetize any insights, any things that will be uploaded by the subject that is derived from personal data. So actually they are making money. Well, like summarizing this is they are making money from you accessing you the personal data that you're actually providing, and you only can have access to it if you pay an additional fee, because you don't have just information about yourself, do you? You have information about who visited your profile, which means that actually someone else's data that if you have definitely a paid subscription, you can have access to it. When did that happen? Where they are based and information. Anywhere, like, I don't know, a recruiter.
Everything you can find within their profiles. And the issue here for me is where data protection stops and if it stops and where the commercial interests begin.
Mm-hmm.
And if they must be side by side or...
Yeah. And Janine,
it's hard to explain.
I agree. Janine, I think, is making a very good point. We agree with you. It's definitely like the paid fee is definitely not the right way to do it. It can be arguable that it is definitely third party data, so therefore, like, will be not be able to not under the scope of the SAR. But I think as well is interesting because I'm not sure about you, but it was the first time that actually I thought about the premium subscription and not just in LinkedIn, but actually in other platforms. And how can this actually influence our rights? So I think it's a really good point. And still related to SAR, we are dealing with a very interesting case. Actually, Jasmine is the leader of this one. And it's about AI platform that is actually being fed by OpenAI. Is a really, really cool case, actually. And when we have a chance to have another episode about AI, I'm sure that this will be definitely touching that. But because we were analyzing this, we came to the point that apparently OpenAI, I did not know this, they have their own redaction tool. So they introduced this in April, a month ago. And they have this their redaction tool. If it's not free, is a very symbolic fee that you pay to actually have reduction services. Questions that automatically come to my mind. I mean, obviously, I read the statement that they had and they would say, oh, this is great for data protection. We will help organizations for very symbolic amount of money to for them to be able to actually redact information, etc. We understand these services are very expensive, but obviously from us as a practitioner, this creates loads of questions.
Yeah,
I think super about bias, about transparency, about accountability. Obviously, we appreciate that redaction tools currently are majority AI, but I do like to know that there will be always a human intervention in the end of the day,
of course,
to make sure that what was redacted as well is actually accurate. And questions about is, where is going my documents? Where are they going? Who is
stopping? Like, you want to solve a problem that you have internally, but at the same time, you may create another one.
Absolutely.
And
I think that's the big one, isn't it? Like, we want to resolve something and then a thousand questions come up.
Do you want to handle a breach after that, releasing out special category personal information?
And do you know exactly? Because OpenAI, I'm not sure if you had ever a chance to read their privacy notice, but they do have a statement dedicated only to the organization that they share the data with. And my thoughts are, it's super broad. And to be honest, if I want to filter, I have no idea who is involved with this sharing data. And in kind of a, because one thing is me as a person, but my own right, I will use ChatGPT, imagine, and I upload any information that I want to.
Mm-hmm.
This is my problem. Obviously, there are lots of responsibilities, but it's my responsibility on the data that I input in there. Another thing is organizations using as a reduction tool, uploading other people's data, including the documents in there, and saying, well, now you redact because we want to, we have the right, we are exercising your right, we are using this as a tool because we have no much budget to have a better tool or more, I don't know, diligent tool. So this is a good solution.
It's the risk. Again, you have to balance that.
Wow, I think it's a massive risk for what we have this. But without further delay, we are jumping in on our topic.
Yep.
What auditors always find and why? And obviously, this is about our audits. I think this is such a good topic. And I'm expecting a lot of engagements. I know that me and you, at least, we are very excited to talk about this. But I think before we crack on with the tools and how we do it and checklists, I think it's important to understand actually what is a GDPR audit? Because we talk about audits in general and we understand obviously this is like a comprehensive review about something that is already existent. It's like a checkpoint. Okay, let's see what you have our checklist. But in GDPR is quite a niche, isn't it? We have been able to do some audits recent.
We enjoy audits.
Yeah.
To be honest, because it's not a checklist, like asking and responding, yes, no, we have it, we don't have it. It's like a whole discussion and you try to discover how the organization handles personal information and how the policies, if they have any policies in place, how they're implemented. So you have the chance to discuss with different employees and different teams to understand if they have data protection in mind, and if they do, what is the mature level of the data protection within the organization. So I feel it's quite interesting for the auditors, and then it can function as a mini training for the employees, and they have the chance to also ask and discuss their concerns in relation to personal information. So it has happened to me before, having long discussions about how they handle personal information. Mm-hmm. And in this way, you discover a lot more. Because they open themselves and they describe the data flows in detail. So, yeah, I find it very interesting. It's not a checklist for sure.
Absolutely not. I think it's a good way, obviously, to identify some weaknesses, to identify exactly what you are missing and how you are missing stuff. And it is really important to have these audits in a very early stages and to be a continuous work, because A couple of things actually that I came as a very new to the audit world. I always come to a point, okay, so what does this mean? So is it an audit? So you come with a report, you have an action plan.
Yeah.
I answer your questions and that's it. Because as soon as the action plan is completed, then we are GDPR compliant and that's his go. So many red flags because of this. I think the audit, the fact you, you touched such a good point, the fact that it's not just a checklist, is a comprehensive work, is a continuous comprehensive review of something that is already there, implemented, or what actually needs to be in place to achieve compliance of a certain legislation, in this case, the UK Data Protection Law. And it's so important to be, to have the employees engaged with you. Because I came across, unfortunately, a couple of examples of audits from previous places that I've worked with. And they audits were about, can you just share your IGF, your information governance framework, anything that you might have documentation-wise, we'll review for you, and then we'll produce a report, and then call this an audit. Mm-mm. And this was something that's, it was, okay, so it's always just a documentation, because that's insufficient, isn't it? That means you can have something in place, you can draft something, but what does that mean? Does employees know?
Is it safe to make conclusions in relation to compliance only by paper? I really don't think so. Even if you have all the policies and procedures on paper, but your employees don't know what a data breach is, what a DPIA is, do you comply with the legislation?
Absolutely not. No.
Can you identify that through an audit, a remote audit where you only review documents? Is it an audit?
Is it not just a compliance assessment, or what we call sometimes a gap analysis as well? Because I think there are a couple, obviously there are different types of exercises that we can have in reviewing process. And I think there is this misconception about when you are reviewing something, automatically the word that comes from our mouth is audit. Mm. It's not true. I don't, at least personally, I don't agree that a review automatically translates in an audit. It's different from that.
There are loads
of like techniques and mechanisms that are like automatically linked to an audit to make it so different from the other product. And to make something compliant, so the way we deal with it, at least myself, is I go through the principles. I go through the principles. I understand exactly what each principle tells me, well, in a data controller perspective, that we need to have in place and what is actually required. And even within that, we do need to have something in place. So we have a policy, procedure, even the register. But it's not enough. We need to make sure that it's actually practical and effective to the organization itself. And then finally, the people know it's effective in that way. People understand exactly what they need to do. And I think if you do have a policy, you have a procedure and a register, and actually it's practical because it actually mirrors the reality, but then you have someone telling you, actually, I never read that in my life. I have no idea the escalation points for a data breach. Would you say that is compliant? We automatically said that.
Yeah.
Wrong. Well, red flag.
The most regular discovery in audits. We have policies in place. We have procedures in place. And then you discuss with the HR team or the marketing team or any employee. And they're like, oh, do we have such a policy? Oh, I didn't know. Yeah. So, this is where my report will begin.
Mm-hmm.
Usually explaining that it is all right to have policies and procedures in place, what's happening with the training.
Mm-hmm.
This is not implemented. What about accountability? We cannot fulfill this requirement, or even security. Can we fulfill the security principle if we don't comply with an information security policy or a risk assessment regarding the tools and the software we use. So yes, I think this is my main discovery in many places. And then another thing that I have noticed is when you go on site for audits, you can discover a lot more hard copies.
Absolutely.
Being everywhere, being in unlocked cabinets, including personal information. Anyone can access it anytime. Or you can also find server rooms which are not fire protected or they're not locked. Anyone can access a server room. So it's very important for me to also do on-site visits to understand what is the feeling around data protection.
Absolutely.
Or CCTV.
Yeah.
Again.
And we had something that we, with the visitor. When we are visiting the place and the book that they need to sign us, the visitor's book.
Yeah.
We came to that point. So I think because it's really hard. I think audit is actually... The underestimated, I think, is really hard to do an audit. I think it's so many things at or in a very short period of time, couple of days, 3, 4, 5 days minimum, for you to assess every single aspect of the organization. Because in the end of the day, that person that is actually making that judgment is in the assessment, is telling you within, obviously, within the risk base, if it's something is compliant, partially, largely compliant, or actually non-compliant. And that evidence is so necessary and is so many things that you need to understand. For example, one of the things that I do like, because, well, I'm not biased here, but is one of my favorite topics in actually in GDPR and general in general is third parties. So it's something that I do like to dedicate loads of my time, because I think that is exactly here that organizations absolutely miss it.
Yeah.
We have, I came to a point, so I start, for example, with our ROPA and standing, for example, let's understand exactly in each department, which third parties are here involved, what we have, where are they based, outside, inside of the UK. Do you have a data processing agreement in place? You say yes, let's then navigate. So you show me what you have documentation wise, and now we need to test it. You say you have actually this third party register. You told me that you have all these agreements in place. These are the dates. Let's see. Give me a sample. Give me this. Yeah. I choose exactly. Give me this, and that, and let me test it. And to be honest, unfortunately, goodbye, Charlotte. Unfortunately, sometimes what happens is this is actually not true or is inaccurate. And I came to a point as well that sometimes this documentation mirror what they wanted to be. Their wishes as a controller, we wish this is what privacy notice, we wish it's actually our business, we wish that we actually made the things like this. But actually what we come to the conclusion is we don't do it anyway. And this is why the audits are so important, because it's a cross-reference between what we are saying to the external world that we do versus we actually
what
do,
actually
and it's exactly like the cross reference between both of the worlds, and it's really important, particularly when the auditor needs to be independent, because if obviously we have an internal audit, which I appreciate, and sometimes in budgets and stuff, it's really really important to have it. It's better than nothing, but then when you are actually assessing your own work. Is complicated.
It's conflicted.
You need to not have an ego. You need to put that aside. You need to be serious. You need to be independent. And therefore,
it's not
I think
an easy work.
But it's really hard. And I appreciate like everyone here, and I'm assuming everyone at least already had audit, or actually were part of the audit, or part of any interview process or anything like that. If you have any kind of feedback, we would love to hear that, because I don't know about you, actually, when I go on site visits to do these audits and carry out these interviews with the individuals, I feel that people see me as a monster.
This what I
or I feel
to
that
say.
I'm the police and I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm not here to yeah, do yeah, anything yeah. wrong.
This is what I wanted to say, that sometimes you try as an auditor to collect as much as you can to form your report, but then there are some employees that they don't want to give what you need or explain what they're doing because
they're scared.
Maybe
as well.
Maybe it's the word audit, but I've done my yes. first audit with Phil, and in every single interview with any employee, he would explain why we're here, how we can help, what will happen after that, what will happen with the information that you will give us. And this helped, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to always explain that I'm here for good. I won't judge you. Yeah. I just want to make things better and more compliant. And I feel this helps.
To be honest, I felt as well, like you made such a very good point. It's like the audit as a word is like have these, I don't know, this unseen meaning around it as an automatically negative. Yeah. Well, it's just to help and obviously make things better and identify room for improvement. But I came up with situations actually that I needed to say to people, I am not here to judge you and I am not here to say something bad, or I'm not here to like to do anything wrong about it. I this what are you saying? And I feel that a lot with breaches, particularly with breaches.
Yeah.
That you have done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. Like let's navigate this and let's understand how can we make it better. Yeah. And it's exactly the audit purpose, it's exactly for that.
Yeah, maybe this happens because the organizations decide to have an audit after a breach.
Yeah.
And they think that we may try to find all the wrong actions that mm-hmm. they've done, which is not the purpose. Yeah. We may find something, but we'll come back with an action plan to do it better in the future. So,
absolutely, absolutely. You know what? As well, like one thing that I always like to talk about is, and it's part of obviously the name of the topic, that is what we always find. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually intrigued to understand, because for me is always I know exactly what I will find, because I do like to prepare myself for an audit is we have the audit. And then we prepare ourselves beforehand. So we understand what is the organization, when obviously the organization is not part of our clientele. So we have to prepare, we do the research about the organization, the structure, how they build. We have all the information available online, and as well the information that they made us available beforehand as well, documentation-wise and stuff. So I made it all this checklist and we understand like cross-reference, and I know exactly where I will find something wrong, and it's always about retention.
Ah,
our retention will be always something that I know for a fact, I'm already ready to say, well, this is definitely not correct.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like the employees don't even know what retention is and that we may delete information at some point. Like I had an audit recently and there was a policy that we delete personal information every 2 years in relation to contracts, I believe that was it. But we do that manually. And I had a discussion after that with the employees and they never delete the information. So do you have a retention policy for sure? I don't think so.
It's always like that, isn't it? Like, oh, yes, we do have the policy. Yes, it's a procedure here. We have even a schedule. And it goes like exactly within the lines of what is respected from us, etc. Employees. So I'll regulate your emails deleted. It's always like the question. I have my email since like 20 years ago. I'm definitely not being deleted. Oh, really? Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And what about you? Like in terms of like, I think retention is the screaming one in terms of what is we will always find. I think is always one issue about shared drives from 2012, no deletion practices, or actually we have the manual ones that obviously is a deletion practice.
It
can work for like smaller organizations. Risky can that be? It definitely will be flagged.
It can be, but if you have only 5 or 10 employees.
Exactly. Maybe
you can apply it, but then all the employees must know what they should do with information on the deletion.
What about duplications? That absolutely takes me out. That
or documents stored in devices. What I regularly find is people using their personal devices for work purposes, and no one knows. They don't have a bring your own device policy in the organization. The organization doesn't know that some employees use their phones for contacting customers, storing contracts, and if you receive a SAR, how you can provide all the personal information that you hold. So this is something that I regularly come across.
You know, Janine, this is a, I think actually that's the biggest argument that I have is, but we are keeping the data because we never know, we might need it. And then there are actually these cases that they are actually very helpful for certain aspects. So but we'll keep this between us, okay? Let's not share this. But it's a good point on that, because you know, I've done one actually very recently, and one of them that I always got, and is one of the questions that I do like to ask, is about WhatsApp.
WhatsApp
is always something that I do like to ask, because, and now obviously with the AI, ChatGPT or any AI platform to be used within like work environments. But I feel that WhatsApp is something that is a constant, and everyone's use it to, because it's easier, it's a communication tool, and even within like colleagues and internally, but as well externally with clients. And it's always a question that I would like to ask, because we do have beforehand any policies, and if WhatsApp is used, I'm expected at least to see in information security policy, in your bring your own device kind of thing, and like a specific method. I would like to have a WhatsApp policy, the way it's accepted to be used, yes or no. But when I have people saying, we do use WhatsApp, and actually, particularly in the housing, actually, that is the contractors, they took pictures, for example, from the house itself. I like to for the molds, and then don't realize that potentially the tenants are in the picture as well, and all photos, everything. And I'm just like, okay, so do you do this? And you accept it, so you know it, and it's nowhere to be seen, because this is information. This is personal information that you know as a controller that is being used, but you are not even considering that within your governance side of things. So, something to flag as well. So it's always something that I would like to touch ever in my audit.
I had also met employees accessing the CCTV footages on their phones 24/7. So again, this is...
This
was not caught in a policy or in a CCTV policy, employees' privacy policy. So... again, the same.
I think the CCTV's one is really, really I think it's with the CCTV, just having a 24/7 monitoring. I appreciate that on the other side of the coin, security. I'm the CEO. I was the one implementing it. I was the one approving them. Okay, but do you understand the risk? And I think that's the other perspective and the approach of an audit, because the auditors per se, they have the nature of an audit, and exactly they are the role as an auditor. You are just checking exactly what they have in place, and you are assessing that, and you are just taking your notes to be able to report it, and therefore to make corrective actions and recommendations afterwards.
And we manage the risk.
Exactly. But in principle, by nature, you are not there to advise. You are not there to tell them what is the best approach. You are there to make questions, make your notes, and that is how it is. However, I think there is the other side of things that I know that is how we do it here, and I'm happy with that approach, because as you were mentioning in the beginning, we do use these audits to as well raise awareness and create that awareness, and not on the training side of things, but as it is as well at the same time, because when you are flagging, okay, this is, show me this, they see you taking notes, or you obviously make a comment, and this not sounds right because of this, this and that, they will obviously come back with questions. Yes. So how do you suggest? Mm-hmm. What do you want us to do? And there is always a question, oh, shall I say here, shall I not? Because obviously I have this, my role is only here to give this side of things. I think we should. I think it should. I think we should create this awareness, and we should create this moment like that is between us and that department, or us and that individual, that probably they don't have anyone internally to make these questions, or they don't feel comfortable to do them. So we have that duty, I would say.
It's the same by including the our recommendation in the audit report, because they can find out that they have a specific issue of non-compliance, but how can we address that? So I think it's a little bit relieving, including some recommendations and suggested actions in the in our report. And it's the same when we go on site and an employee asks for something. I can just recommend something for them to know that they can handle it better in the future, and we will figure it out. Absolutely. I think it's relieving.
Absolutely. I think as well, once the audit is completed, is important to have being, and in this case, I would say, I think is regardless if it's online or still on site, but I think is important to as well, to, as you were mentioning with yourself and Phil, explaining what you're doing here, what is your objective and what are you trying to achieve? And in the end as well, to potentially do like a summary about your overall, at least key findings, and explain them, because sometimes the audit reports, and well, I'm sure that you will agree with me, we are practitioners, and before that we were fortunate enough that we studied law.
Yeah.
And like back in the days, training lawyers and lawyer in your case. So you do understand this jargon and legal jargon that sometimes is hard for us to understand sometimes those concepts. So
and overwhelmed.
And we have on the other side people that potentially never come across something like this and never come across with these concepts and definitions. So it's really important that on this side of things, we have someone that aside from the preparation work, the interviews, the report, is as well someone that is able to explain and explain and be able to answer the questions that people might have, because they will come. We are talking about the report that can be up to 100 pages, 150 pages, and like minimum, I would say 50. And we are talking about a very brief, high-level review. And these will generate questions. And we need allow people to have a room for them to be to be answered.
Yeah, so that it's easier for them to read the report and understand that it's okay.
Yeah.
And they'll figure it out.
Yeah. I think the report as well needs to be something about explaining what is actually required by law, what are your findings in terms of factual speaking, then cross-reference then with the law. Mm-hmm. So because of the law, it expects this should be implemented, and then the corrective action and stuff. But as well as we should not assess the maturity, as you mentioned, but as well prioritize the risk. Because obviously we will come with 200 recommendations and corrective actions, but not all of them are high risk. So you should as well have a feeling from your report or on the as an auditor, you should be able to, okay, we have all of this, but now what is actually the priority? What should we have in mind to for this controller to actually achieve that needs to be solved as soon as possible, or at least at a very at the same time. I've seen this approach as well happening, that are the quick wins.
Yeah.
So a quick win at the same time with a higher risk priority, if we can do it like
which is very easily for the customer.
Yes.
What was the strangest finding in an audit that you had?
The stranger that I had two actually that came to my mind because there were two from the same audit and they were both very recent. So if the person actually involved in here is in the audience, I know that you will is you. But I was carrying out this audit, and again, as I mentioned, the third parties is always my main topic to go.
Yeah.
Because I feel that is exactly where there are so many questions and so many matters that we should assess, since the procurement level, due diligence, transfer risk assessments, and the date processing agreements,
ongoing
and et cetera,
yeah.
So many things to assess that it's very easy to miss it.
Mm.
And the so I started my audit reviewing the documentation. The ROPA was my starting point. And then I dedicated myself to, okay, data processing agreements. And actually, this looks good because we do actually have data processing agreement for every single supplier, it said, allegedly. Okay, I want a sample then. Give me, I chose exactly what I wanted. Like, I want this, 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 and that. I was already on site when this happened. And I saw that what they do and the data processing agreements that they say they had is a template dedicated for each supplier, but was not signed.
Oh, no.
So they actually had something. They had the template itself. They had the document. They had the text that was there.
But the data processor didn't know.
But no one was aware of the existence because it was not signed, was not distributed, was not even communicated. Yeah. So as you can imagine, well, I need to explain that too. Obviously, this was not binding. There are obligations, Article 28, etc. Yes, of course. But
otherwise, it's not an agreement.
Yeah, so let's make this binding then. So the word was, okay, you just need to distribute it. I think the other one, it was not like weird. It was just, to be honest, something that unfortunately we come across a lot is a privacy notice actually mirrors what they wish to be happening and is not.
Yeah.
So it's completely different from the reality and does not match the reality. It's like, for example, something like legitimate interest to be everywhere as a lawful basis. Everything is legitimate interest. And then there is a couple of consent you can see there. And when you challenge the consent, okay, please explain me how you obtained consent, and you come across actually relevant consent, but it's not even valid. So it's just, it's just not mirroring the reality, or it's not even checked or tested the validity of the things that are being included in that.
Totally nice.
What about you?
Yeah, I had like an instance where they were capturing audio in a public place, but no signatures. Nowhere in the privacy policies. Yeah, and it was open. It was on 24/7.
Yeah,
so you could go in there, say something, and everyone could hear it. And actually, this was uploaded on their website, so you could go on their website, click play, and hear it.
Here I go. Oh my god.
I think this was the strangest one.
Oh my God.
I didn't understand the purpose of that. But yeah.
This is a weird one. I'm conscious about the time, but obviously we had a couple of technical issues in the beginning. So I will ask you, because I forgot to actually mention in the beginning that there is nowhere to be seen that an audit, well, there are a couple of references to an audit, but it's not as an obligation, like a single article saying that you must conduct, for example, annual audit. There are a couple of things in terms of, for example, I think the screaming one is the accountability.
Oh, for sure.
You need an audit because you to be responsible, you need to demonstrate that you actually are compliant, and the way you demonstrate you are compliant, you can never demonstrate that if you never test it.
Yeah.
And the way you do it, I think, is it obviously within audit, and is the way you demonstrate to the world. A couple of things as well around, for example, the data processor. You is part of the Article 28. One of the things is when the controller can actually go to the processor and then do an audit and carry out, and they expect that from you. One thing is actually now, and I will finalize because you know that I do like to talk, and I will stay here for hours, is so many times I came across a due diligence questionnaire where is you are just and only focusing yourself in what they say to you without cross-referencing it with anything. Is that obviously information available online, etc. But as well is what it is, because as we can see now, we can state whatever we want within a document, but if it's actually reality is another thing. And I think this is just a red flag and a warning for our practitioners that are dealing with procurement or actually having such an involvement with third parties and the due diligence. If you do, and we are talking about like high risk, etc., if you can only test it as much as you can, and it need to be reasonable and proportionate, obviously. And audit and doing that audit yourself is super time consuming and budget wise and even resources. I appreciate that. But do bear always in mind that they document and they tell you what they want to tell you. And you are not testing, you are not cross-referencing, you are just taking their word as something relevant. So just like click on that. And I would just would like to ask you, so in terms of like key findings or anything relevant about the audit, what will be your like closing mark about audits? Like people should be scared of them. People should like, you know, or like, let's do an audit every day now, because why not? What will be your closing mark and anything that you would like to say to the audience?
Yeah, usually we discuss the findings, because they seem always concerned about the negative findings. So it's them asking, oh, what do you think? Mm-hmm. So I usually explain the issues that I might have found, but saying at the same time that there are some things that we can do to fix this sector quickly, and we need more time to do that. But it's something that you can achieve, so that I can like be positive at the end.
Because I think that's very important, isn't it? Is as well the how you present the auditor on your side, because should be not seen as something negative, should be seen something positive, exciting, and as well as something that you are using for your own benefits, and there is room for improvement. So I think I will just finalize by saying that for me, an organization or a controller that they are as part of the audit, and the best performance within an audit is not that you have the best policies, the most complete, the most granular, and insightful and well written, is actually that they obviously they exist 100%, but as well as people are aware of them and they are practical and they are putting in practice. So they are real, they are valid, and they are real. And I think that is how we will finish. We already have Miles on the other side, so I will finish like this. So thank you so much. Have an absolutely lovely weekend. This time it will not be a bank holiday. Well, but we'll be back next week with GDPR news. But thank you so much. And thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Happy weekend.